2x4s.
Well, that might be a good idea.
We need to go to Owens Corning, not Lowe's or Home Depot. We need to go to Owens Corning for the shingles.
I think I'll check on Georgia Pacific myself, maybe after the first of the year when everything gets settled back in. But I think that's a great idea. I'm going to follow up on that. By the way, I want to mention something before I forget it. Benedict at Large at the chat room.
Yeah.
He's an Ivy League graduate.
Yes, he is.
And he said that he is going to tell people in the Ivy League to look out for Cassie and see that she gets a scholarship to an Ivy League school.
Boy, I want that to happen, and I do.
I didn't
get the Ivy League education, but I was very fortunate to get to start at a very small liberal arts college, and I'm a believer in the liberal arts, and this, and in many ways, it's the liberal arts that's the very core of what goes on in the Ivy League. I got to start college at a place where, you know, the freshman survey classes that state colleges have, you know, 350 students, there were 15. You know,
well, you know,
you can't hide in those classes. You actually, that's one of the things. You got to do the work.
Well, you know, if I had it to do all over again, the only thing I would probably change is I would not go to that Baptist college. But as far as Southern Miss goes, hey, you couldn't give me a scholarship anywhere that would be more I would take faster than I would the Southern Miss.
Well, see, that's how I feel about WVU, or as we like to call it, Harvard on the Mon. But it's being observed in the chat room right now that there are things that an Ivy League diploma will do for you that others won't.
Sure.
And there's no getting around that. I know brilliant people, and I know brilliant people who, you know, never set foot in a college a day in their life.
And then look at your nut brain in the White House.
Well, you know, I've made the argument a couple of times that Yale and Harvard should be disassembled brick by brick because they let that sucker, they demeaned themselves by giving him the degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing. They gave him the degrees, Sarge.
Sure,
he damn sure didn't earn them.
Yeah, you can tell talking with him. Yeah, here's what's really scary is when he first ran for office in Texas, he went down there and he tried to pass himself off as an intellectual. Can you believe that?
Oh, Lord.
And he decided that's when he overstepped that he needed to run as just a good old boy, because running as an intellectual just didn't impress the voters. But, you know,
But that says something negative about the electorate, too, Sarge.
Well, it does.
The idea that... And that's not how this country was founded. This country was not founded looking down its nose on smart people.
Yeah.
We've been taken there, Sarge.
We have to get away from that mindset, because we've got to start saying, okay, I may not be the Bill Clinton of my time, because let's face it, Bill Clinton whatever you want to say about Clinton, he is a brain and a half. You know, he is just an awesome brain.
Bona fide, certified, absolute, no questions about it, genius.
Right. I mean, there's no way you can take that away from the man, regardless whether you like or dislike him. But we need people like that in charge. I want the best and the brightest in power, because I want these people who can move our country forward. That's why I think Al Gore would be a great president if we could get him to run again, or Dennis Kucinich, you know, or maybe even John Edwards. But we need somebody who really is intelligent, who doesn't mind rolling his sleeves up and doing the study and doing the midnight oil burning.
Well, Sarge, what did they say about Clinton, that he slept about 4 hours a night?
Yeah, it's Clinton. Clinton.
You know, meanwhile, George Bush has his footy pajamas. George Bush is in bed right now.
Yeah.
Okay? It's 8:45 on the East Coast. George Bush is in bed. The leader of the free world is sound asleep. And he will be that way till 6 a.m.
And if he hears something he don't want to hear, he just, like a child, he just covers his ears up and, nah, 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 you know. He is an idiot, and I am so embarrassed by this man being in that office. I don't care how he got there. I am embarrassed. I am ashamed of this. I hate to find out in the future what the kids are going to say when they get to be my age, and they look back and say, good God, those our adults back then, they were crazy. You know,
yeah.
I am plumb ashamed to even think about it.
Well, you know, we look back at the Victorian age and we snicker because they were so backward and so hung up, and yet they thought they were the very epitome. They were the apex of society and culture.
And you know something, Bob? We've got to get away from something, too. I noticed that you talking with Jim last night. We've got to get away from this idea of we don't talk bad about the dead. Look, you're not talking bad about somebody if you're telling their actual history.
Well, that's kind of how I look at it, sir.
You know, because, look, if we can't talk bad about the dead, what are we going to do? We have to change our whole history. We have to say, well, Hitler didn't do anything all that bad. We can't talk bad about Hitler. He did. Hey, we better talk bad about Hitler because he was a sorry scumbag, just like the slime we got in the White House now. And we got to get away from that mentality. I don't care what the human being was like. Gerald Ford may have been one of the nicest men you'll ever meet in your life. From all indications, he was a very pleasant person. But that doesn't...
Look, Adolf Hitler knew which fork to use with the shrimp. I mean, that's not a qualification.
No, sir, the truth is the truth. Ain't that right?
Yeah.
It's like my Uncle Otis used to tell me, and your dad sounds like my Uncle Otis. Uncle Otis would say, our old boy, he just don't even know where he come from. He ain't bright enough to take the pail to the stream.
I grew up hearing those people, you know, and there's so much truth in that.
Yeah, and
ain't got sense enough to come in out of the rain.
Yeah, I mean that's and what is wrong about saying, hey, look, when I die, I don't want people to sugarcoat it. I want people to say, well, you know, Sarge screwed up. He screwed up, and because hey, I will be the first to tell you, don't let my mistakes go away because people will learn from them. And maybe we won't make those same mistakes over again. So don't worry about talking good about old Sarge. Nah. You say whatever you want to about Sarge, just as long as it's helping people, I don't care. Because that, to me, is what we need to do.
I agree. I agree so very much.
And I'm going to let you go, Bob, and I'll keep everybody updated. And I need you and Sean to get together sometime and have a conversation.
We do. Well, we've got to do that.
Because I got an idea. I don't know how it works. I probably shouldn't even say this on the air, but I would kind of like to see if maybe we could arrange somehow to have a simulcast between the two networks on Valentine's Day.
That would be very cool.
Okay. Well,
and I don't know how that happens, but it would be very, very cool.
Okay. I'm going to let you go, and thanks, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
You take care. I don't know how we accomplish this, but the great things can be accomplished if we only work hard enough. We can complicate Jim Yancey's life with successes instead of constant fear of failure. And it's all over that region. And we have to do it because the people who set out to make government fail succeeded. And oh God, what, sixth grade teacher, maybe the fifth grade, I don't remember. It's better to aim high and miss than aim low and hit. You know, it's the very epitome of this Republican government. They have aimed low and they have hit. They never expected anything of themselves, and they never expected anything of the potential greatness that is this country and can be this country, and they have succeeded beyond their They have succeeded in their failure beyond their wildest expectation. You know, I've got a story in the stack here, and it is a real live, genuine, oh my God screamer. Headline: Park Service can't give official age of Grand Canyon for fear of offending creationists. Now, our first inclination on that is, you know, ha ha, stupid fundies. And they are. Okay? They are. You want another one of those great old southern sayings? They don't have sense enough to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. Okay? Well, was it Jesus's boot? And that's our first, but it's so much more dangerous than all of that. You know, this really is the crowd that thinks that thinks that Adam and Eve hunted dinosaurs. Okay, it just is. And the overall danger of these literalists to what we can know about our world and how we can respond to it cannot for an instant be overestimated. Due to pressure from Bush administration officials, the National Park Service is not permitted to give an official age for the Grand Canyon. Additionally, a book claiming the Grand Canyon was created by Noah's flood is for sale at the National Parks bookstore. Oh, head meat microphone. Oh, oh, oh. Oh. The sale of Grand Canyon, A Different View, was scheduled for review over 3 years ago, but no such review has been scheduled or even requested. The creationist book was the only item approved for sale in 2003. And that's the perfectly rational first response to a story like that. But it is so much deeper. Because these people, you know, the illiterate dudes building boats and getting flooded out and coming to Earth on top of a mountain and then having sex with their relatives and repopulating the Earth is all believable to them. And if that can be overcome, then we can survive. Oh, what? We can survive a nuclear holocaust. And we'll battle with the cockroaches for supremacy. You see, these goobers, these freaks, these literalists, are dangerous. Not to the health of our republic. But they are dangerous to our very lives. For fear of offending creationists. Like I said earlier, this country was not founded hating smart people. This country was founded in the hope that smart people could do a better job than people who got to rule countries by virtue of being the Grand Archduke of Harshenfarshenstickenstein. Oh, well, yeah, he's the Grand Archduke of Harshenfarshenfishen, so, well, he gets to rule us. Instead, we said, wait. What happens if we get the smartest people in the country together and we look at the available forms of government and we try to put one together that can almost run itself and relies only on the commitment of, and the goodwill of people who love their country? We're going to make us an idiot-proof government. And you know, for the most part, they were right. But they never counted on the caliber of the absolute top-shelf restaurant-quality brand of morons we have today. Because we have Jerry Falwell. And we have George Bush. And we have James Dobson. And we have Grover Norquist. And we have all manner of free marketeers who are, you know, a weird little fundamentalist religion in and of themselves. This is the kind of story you get in the early years of the 21st century when little kids are bullied for being smart in school. In a culture where running with a blown up pig's bladder is deemed more valuable than understanding what happens to those really bizarre atoms on the periodic table of the elements. When being able to bounce a round ball on a hardwood floor is more to be valued than being able to calculate what happens and where light comes from in the deepest, deepest reaches of space. This is the America that can't afford to offend creationists when the very starlight that shines on the Grand Canyon, some of it left those individual stars millions of years ago and shines only on us, for instance, tonight. That's spooky. It's terrifying. So this is the last show of 2006, and by God, good riddance to 2006. And may you and I, all of us, normal people, decent people, intelligent people, progressive people, liberal people, work every minute of every hour of every day to make 2007 better. Be safe. Be happy. Celebrate a little if you want. Kiss somebody at midnight on the 31st. It's good for you. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Quality News Network. Despite conflicting reports, an Iraqi judge says Saddam Hussein will be executed within hours. He says the government is consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of a religious festival. The former dictator's lawyers originally said he had been transferred from U.S. custody, but Iraqi officials say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow Hussein's execution. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says, quote, "Our forces stay at a constant state of high readiness in Iraq, and I would expect through this period they would do the same," end quote. The White House declined to comment on the timing of Saddam's execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush says he needs more time to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. He says he'll continue to meet with policymakers and will address the nation within the first few days of January. Four sailors on the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul fell overboard today as the submarine was getting underway from an English port, the military said. The four were retrieved by fellow crew members and British authorities. Two were pronounced dead at the hospital, and the other two were treated for minor injuries. In other world news today, in Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister formally took control of the battle-scarred capital for the first time since his government was formed nearly 2 years ago. Ali Mohamed Gedi promised thousands of cheering Somalis peace and stability, saying, quote, "Today is the beginning of a new life, new stabilization, and a new future for Somalia," end quote. In Jerusalem, an Israeli human rights group said today Israeli security forces killed three times as many Palestinians in 2006 than the year before. 141 children were in that annual death toll of 660. In Saudi Arabia, more than 2 million Muslims stood on Mount Arafat today to pray for peace. Security is tight for this year's Hajj. Officials are trying to avoid the kind of stampede that killed 400 pilgrims last year. In Colorado, the governor has declared a state of emergency and the National Guard is on standby. The state is still digging out of last week's storm, and a new blizzard has begun dumping 2 more feet of snow overnight. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Conservationists are petitioning the government to add the North Pacific right whale to the endangered species list. It is the rarest whale in the world and is nearly extinct. In the U.S., the right whale is found only in Alaskan waters. British scientists say they will soon introduce a flu vaccine that's effective against all major strains of the disease, including the avian flu. The researchers say that the inoculations will provide protection for several years, even without boosters. For hundreds of thousands of minimum wage workers around the country, the new year brings a raise. Seven states, Arizona, California, Delaware, Massachusetts, New York, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, are raising their minimum wage. The federal minimum is currently $5.15 an hour. The new wages will go as high as $7.50 an hour. New federal anti-pollution rules go into effect Monday. Better fuels and cleaner diesel engines in new trucks and school buses are expected to reduce emissions by 98%. The new engines will be more expensive, and some trucking companies claim they will be burdened with higher fuel and maintenance costs. 14,000 striking workers at Goodyear Tire and Rubber have voted to accept a 3-year contract. The agreement closes a Texas factory but provides a $1 billion health plan for retirees. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.05 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 40 points at 12,461. The NASDAQ is down 10 points at 2415. And the S&P 500 is down 7 at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board. Oh. 11, right. 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
welcome to Conversation Radio's Night Shift, where the children of the night fight the radical right. It's Foxed Up with John Fox. Foxed Up is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream every day. Be one louder by calling 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877-443-2366.
G'day, everybody. It's Saturday here in Australia. It's probably Friday afternoon, Friday evening where you are, and we're heading into the New Year's weekend, so we're finally wrapping up this ultra crappy, violent, disgusting year, and hopefully we can, you know, go through this whole process we do every year, hoping and praying that the next year is going to be better, and we're going to change directions. And I've got a little something that we're going to do today regarding that very thing, looking back on the future. Welcome aboard Foxed Up, everybody. It's the last show for the year. I still can't believe just that this year is past. I mean, it just, you know, we this network, all kinds of things have just seemed to have made it just fly by. And I don't know if you're the same as myself, but does it seem as you get older that the years get shorter? You know, you remember when you were a kid, and you know you're 10 years old, and you get done with the Christmas, and next Christmas just seems to be, you know, it's in another lifetime. And then just kind of it all seems to accelerate. And I've always had a theory about this, since time is relative, that 1 year, how it feels, is relative to how many you've lived. And hence why people, as they get older, say that time seems to fly by. So that's always been my theory, you know. So when you're 10 years old, 1 year has only been one-tenth of your life. So it's a huge portion that you have to get through again. But when you're 50, 1 year is 2% of your life. So it's a much shorter kind of thing. But anyway, that's my hypothesis, and I'm sticking to it. I've got this big thing, but I might save that for kind of second half of the show, and I won't get through it all, because it's fairly long, and then I hope you all will go and read it yourselves. But we'll get there later. Let's see. Right at the end of the show yesterday, when I was mentioning these Phoenix motor cars, these fully electric vehicles that can be charged with their special charger for 130 miles range in 10 minutes flat. And the pickup truck that they have can hit speeds of 95 miles an hour with 5 passengers and the full payload. And I thought this was pretty cool, you know? I mean, and not only that, you can just plug the thing straight into your 240 outlet or your 220 outlet over there in the States where your clothes dryer is plugged in, and it can trickle charge overnight. And I just think that this is where we got to go. This is, there's no question. And in a related article, right towards the end of the show yesterday, Gene sent me a couple of things regarding more on electric vehicles. Now, one of the things was asking whether or not the power grid could handle all these electric vehicles. So via treehugger.com, there's an interesting little piece here saying we love PHEVs, which is plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. And it says, from the Pacific Northeast National Laboratories, if all cars and light trucks in the nation, talking about the United States, switched from oil to electrons, idle capacity in the existing electric power system could generate most of the electricity consumed by plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. A new study for the Department of Energy finds that off-peak electricity production and transmission capacity could fuel 84% of the country's 220 million vehicles if there are plugged-in hybrid electrics. Because PHEVs are expected to cost about $6,000 to $10,000 more than existing vehicles, mostly due to the cost of batteries, researchers evaluated how long it might take owners to break even on fuel costs. Depending on the price of gas and the cost of electricity, estimates range from 5 to 8 years. But the current lifespan of the about the current lifespan of a battery, if this idea took hold, utilities could end up promoting PHEVs as powerfully as do oil companies when they argue against CAFE standards. Its expression would be a patriotic meme, a plug-in, a security of a green future. And I'm really, really, you know, just, I think that this is fantastic stuff. But the thing that that really blew me away, that, and thank you, Gene, for this, I would have completely missed this, and it's at a site called askprice.com, and I believe I sent this link to the ninjas to post on the show post for today, is about TNT Trucking. And I don't remember if TNT is in the States, but they are the largest trucking and logistics firm in Europe and also here in Australia. And this I find just absolutely fantastic, and I'll try and get to this through this before the break. TNT Express, in partnership with Smith Electric Vehicles, unveiled the world's largest high-performance, zero-emission electric vehicle earlier this month. And now the company is conducting a feasibility study to assess the viability of introducing a 7.5-ton battery-driven lorry, known as a truck to some of you in America, in the other European capitals. The Newton truck, designed and built by Smith Electric Vehicles, is the first ever in its class that can compete with its diesel equivalent, but without the polluting effects of controlled, i.e. nitrogen oxide and particulate matter, and CO2 emissions. It also is virtually silent, causing negligible noise pollution. Peter Baker, TNT Chief Executive Officer, said, "We're committed to significantly reducing controlled and CO2 emissions from the TNT fleet, not just in the UK, but across mainland Europe. We are looking at the viability of introducing these groundbreaking zero-emission vehicles in other major European cities, a move that will further consolidate our position at the top of the Green League in the transportation sector." Representatives from TNT vehicle manufacturers Smith Electronic Vehicles and leading international environmental and engineering consultants DHV are presently assessing the economic and environmental case for escalating the use of the green vehicle. TNT is already considering buying 200 of the Newton trucks for its fleet, subject to a successful pilot scheme currently running in London. The zero-emissions vehicle is exempt from London's congestion charge, approximately £1,750 a year, incurs no road tax, and is battery-driven. It costs just £25 a week to recharge the battery as opposed to £110 on fuel for a diesel vehicle. The gentleman from Smith Electric Vehicles said, "Our vehicles make both economic and environmental sense for urban use. I'm liking this." So, I mean, this is where we got to go. And if you know, obviously TNT has been thinking very far ahead, because if they're that's okay, Agnes. You can crush on Spock all you like. Don't worry about that, folks. That's outside thing. But anyway, obviously TNT realizes that to keep themselves in business in the future, they need to make moves to get off of the petrol and diesel teat. That simple. All right, folks, we're up on our first break and running a little over. We're going to come back with our track of the day, something for ringing in the new year. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. I am John Fox, coming to you from Sydney, Australia, and we'll see you right after this break.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, with steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Anderson. Ah, I love those tattoos. Just a great Australian band. And talk about a guy who has in his later life completely lived not up to his stage name. Angry Anderson is the lead singer of that band that just was playing there. And Angry has become one of the most amazing nice guys that no one realized except for people in the industry. You know, I mean, it's shaved head, bad teeth, full body tattoos, the whole thing, singing songs like "Bad Boy for Love," and you know, over the last few years, he's just become so involved with kids. And from what I understand at the moment, the guy is ranking up all kinds of donations and funds to build a massive, massive community youth center. And it's just really, really funny that, you know, Angry Anderson, the guy fighting for the little guy. I don't know. It's there's something kind of fun about that. Before we get to our track of the day, what am I doing? Oh, right. That's what I'm doing. If you were listening to the show yesterday, Sarge rang in and mentioned that over at unreportednews.net they have a new columnist called Cowgirl. And I suggest you go to unreportednews.net. And you can just over there in the left-hand column, there's a link to Cowgirl's blog, and she's doing environmental stuff. She's got a great piece on the Wonder Crop hemp, and I would suggest going and having a read, because it just opens saying, "Hemp, yay, we won. Big oil, cotton lobby, and all the corporations can't stop us now. The journey always starts with that first baby step." She just starts out saying, "Legalizing hemp, that can be the first baby step to all the other steps along the way, if we the people have the courage to take them. Hemp can go a long way to providing us with a new manufacturing base to replace some of the ones we have lost. Hemp can be a huge start to solving the problems with sustainable agriculture. Hemp can help us provide for fuels to all but replace the fossil fuels, oil-based fuels, we now use to travel and run our day-to-day lives. And that may just be the beginning, depending on if and when we are ready to take a stand against those who have turned this, our great country, from the can-do country of the past to the can't-do country of today. All these issues, more, and the chance to also go a long way to save our environment. What can we ask for?" And she's got a bunch of links talking, just kind of linking to the folks that in North Dakota, who has re-legalized the production of hemp. Now, she does a great job in explaining the difference between hemp and marijuana, okay, and discusses why it is currently illegal, dealing with DuPont, the paper companies, you know, a few other things, and kind of goes back into the history of how hemp was, like, the biggest cash crop in the United States for ages, because of its usefulness for, you know, paper, wood, rope, oil, food. And so I would definitely suggest going to unreportednews.net and having a read of this piece. And the piece that she wrote yesterday, on the disconnect, our connections to the environment and the food we eat, just absolutely, absolutely is so spot on, and is very much along the lines of things I've been saying for a long, long time, that one of the key issues with the environment that we got to deal with is the way that we're farming, and where our food comes from. And yes, Agnes, so right. Hemp makes some of the best fabric that you'll ever come across. And I can tell you, you know, I'm a jeans and t-shirt kind of guy, and I've got this really, really nice long-sleeved hemp shirt that my lovely partner gave me, geez, gotta be 5 years ago. And I'm telling you, the thing has not lost a thread. It has not lost any of its color. It breathes better than anything I own, and I swear to you, I must wear that thing once a week, because one, it's really comfortable, and two, even though it's long sleeved, I can go out in the morning and it's enough to cover and keep my upper body warm, but as things warm up, it breathes better, and I'm not sweating my bejesus off. And, you know, it's not so disposable. And when you're making clothing out of it, when you bleach it, and the same thing with paper, it doesn't need heavy chemicals, and there isn't the chemical runoff, which pollutes our water systems. And it just goes on and on and on and on. So I would go buy Cowgirl's column. It's just really, really good stuff. Anyway, the track of the day, there's nothing really to explain about this. I was looking for something, being that it was the last show for the year, and I woke up this morning, first thing in my head was Steely Dan ringing in the ears. So without further ado, being that this is the last show of the year, before we start a new one, which hopefully will be better, we'll get out of this stupid war, maybe, we hope, but just for no other reason than I think it fits, Steely Dan ringing in the ears.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweats. Great prices? No sweats. Great looks? No sweats. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds. And we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Knowing always in time, see how this love stays divine.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You're here with John Fox out of Sydney, Australia. Oh, man, the tea party. Ah, just the sound of that man's voice just goes right up your spine. It's just, oh, it's an awesome thing, and I swear it's the only rock band I've ever known that if I'd play it at a sound check when first firing up the PA, if there were women anywhere involved with the crew or whatever, instant belly dancing. It's just, I don't know why, it just happens. Okay, John's going to attempt a bit of a reading, and we're going to see how much of this we get through. This is a really, really neat piece that came out a few days ago. Actually, it's over a week old, but I think it's perfect for the final show of the year. From truthout.org, you can look for a piece called The Age of Mammals by Rebecca Solnit. And I think this is a reprint from tomdispatch.com. Now, for those of you that are familiar with David Rovix, whose music closes out Bruce Birch's show, his song After the Revolution, which is an exercise in what if, you know, somewhere down the line in the future. And very, very similar vibe on this piece. It's someone looking back in 2025 at the first quarter of the 21st century. So looking back on the first quarter of the 21st, and the first section is The View from the Grass. I've been writing the year-end other news summary from Tom Dispatch since 2004. Somewhere around 2017, however, the formula for digging up overlooked stories and grounds for hope grew weary. So for this year, we've decided instead to look back on the last 25 years of the 21st century. But it was creatures from 60 million years ago who reminded me how to do it. The other day, I borrowed some kids to go gawk at me at the one thing that can always count on in an ever more unstable world, Age of Dinosaur dioramas in science museums. This one had the usual dramatic clash between Tyrannosaurus rex and Triceratops, pterodactyls soaring through the air, one with a small reptile and its toothy maw, and some oblivious grazing by what, when I was younger in another millennium, we would have called a brontosaurus. Easy to overlook in the drama was a shrew-like mammal perched on a reed or thick blade of grass, too small to serve even as an enticing pterodactyl snack. The next thing coming down the line always looks like that mammal at the beginning. That's what I told the kids. Inconsequential beside the point, the official point usually being the Clash of the Titans. That's exactly why mainstream journalists spent the first decade of the century debating the meaning of the obvious binaries, the Democrats versus the Republicans, McWorld versus Global Jihad. Much as political debate in the early 1770s might have focused on whether the French or English monarch would have supremacy in North America, not long before the former was beheaded and the latter evicted, the monarchs in all their splashy scale were the dinosaurs of the day, and the 18th century mammal no one noticed at the first was named Revolution. The early 21st century version might have been called localism, or maybe anarchism, or even civil society regnant. In some strange way, it turned out the windmill builders were more important than the U.S. Senate. They were certainly better preparing for the future, anyway. The mammal clinging to the stalk had crawled up from the grassroots where the choices were so much more basic and significant than, for instance, the one between fundamentalism and consumerism that was on everyone's lips in the years of the young George Bush. If the 20th century was the age of dinosaurs, of General Motors and the Soviet Union, of McDonald's, globalized entertainment networks, and information superhighways, the 21st has increasingly turned out to be the age of the small. You can see it in the countless local economy projects, wind power stations, farmers markets, local environmental organizations, food co-ops, that were already proliferating, hardly noticed by the time of the Saudi oil wars swept the whole Middle East, damaging major oil fields and bringing on the great gasoline crisis of 2009. That was the one that didn't just send prices skyrocketing, but actually becalmed the globe roaming container ships with their great steel box loads of bottled water, sweatshop garments, and other gratuitous commodities. The resulting food crisis of the early years of the second decade of the century, which laid big petroleum-style farming low, suddenly elevated the status of peasant immigrants from what was then called the undeveloped world, particularly Mexico and Southeast Asia. They taught the less agriculturally skilled in suddenly greening North American cities to cultivate the victory gardens that mitigated the widespread famines then beginning to sweep the planet. It also turned out that the unwieldy and decadent SUVs of the millennium made great ecological sense, but only if you parked them facing south, put in sunroofs, and used the high-windowed structures as seed starter greenhouses. The crisis spelled an end to the epidemic of American obesity, both by cutting calories and obliging so many Americans to actually move around on foot and bike and their hands. And it goes on, the second section, Bush, the accidental empire slayer. This is where it gets really fun. For a brief period in the early years of that second decade of this chaotic century, a whole school of conspiracy theorists gained popularity by suggesting that Bush the Younger was actually the puppet of a left-wing plot to dismantle the global hyperpower of the moment. They pointed to the Trotskyite origins of the neoconservatives, whose mad dreams had so clearly sunk the American empire in Iraq and Afghanistan as part of their proof. They claimed that Bush's advisors consciously plotted to devastate the world's most powerful military on the planet, near collapse even before it was torn apart by the unexpected officer movement, which burst into existence in 2009, followed by next year's anti-draft riots in New York and elsewhere. The Bush administration's mismanagement of the U.S. economy, while debt piled up, so obviously spelled the end of the era of American prosperity and power that some explanation, no matter how absurd, was called for and for a while embraced. The long view from our own moment makes it clearer that Bush was simply one of the last dinosaurs of the imperial era, doing a remarkably efficient job of dragging down what was already doomed. If you're like most historians of our quarter-century moment, then you're less interested in the obvious why it fell than discovering the earliest hints of the mammalian alternatives springing up so vigorously with so little attention in those years. Without benefit of conspiracy, what Bush the Younger really prompted, however blindly, was the beginning of decentralization policy in the North American states. During the 8 years of his tenure, dissident locales started to develop what later will become full-fledged independent policies on everything from queer rights and the environment to foreign relations and the notorious USA Patriot Act. For example, as early as 2004 to 2007, several states, led by California, began setting their own automobile emission standard to address already evident effects of climate change so studiously ignored by Washington. In June of 2005, mayors from cities across the nation unanimously agreed to join the Kyoto Protocol limiting climate-changing emissions, a direct rejection of national policy. At a national meeting in Seattle, librarians across the country publicly refused to comply with the USA Patriot Act, and small towns nationwide condemned the measure in the years before. Many of the towns also condemned what historians now call the U.S.-Iraq quagmire. It was the bullying of the Bush administration that pushed these small entities to fight back, to form local administrations and set local regulations, to leave the republic behind as they joined the journey to a viable future. And when their withdrawal was finished, so was the republic. Now, the thousands of tons of high-level radioactive waste that pro-nuclear reactor Washington policies had brought into being are buried in the granitic bedrock underlying the former capital, known as the nuclear Arlington, in contrast with the human Arlington to the south, which will receive the remains of a few more nostalgic officers from the Gulf Wars, then closed for good. The whole history of armament, radioactive contamination, disarmament, and alternative energy research is on display in the museum housed in the former Supreme Court building, though many avoid the area for fear of radiation contamination. In hindsight, all we see that the left-right divide so harped upon in the era was but another dinosaur binary. After all, small government had long been, at least theoretically, a conservative mantra, as was, at least theoretically, left-wing support for the most localized forms of people power. And yet neither group ever pictured government or people power truly getting small enough to exist as it does today. And its most gigantic and bioregional groups, about the size of the former states of Oregon and Georgia, but of course deeply enmeshed in a complex global webs of alliances. All this was unimagined in, for instance, the dismal year of 2006. By the time the Republican Party itself split in 2012, its two adversarial wings, dubbed the Fundament Party and the Conservatives, the American empire was dismantling itself. Of course, the United States still nominally exists. We'll pay a bow to its year at the Decolonization Day fireworks on July 4th, but it is largely a symbolic entity, like the British royal family was for a century before its dissolution in 2020. A similar death of the dinosaurs moment was in work in the mainstream media. The big newspapers and television networks of that era, during the early years of the century, as Bush the Younger dragged the country deeper into the mire of unwinnable wars and countless lies, most of the big newspapers and television news programs lost their nerve, their edge, or even their eyesight, and failed dismally to report the stories that mattered. Some fell to scandal. The New York Times was never the same after the Judith Miller crisis of 2005. Some were sabotaged from without, like the Los Angeles Times, undercut by its parent corporation, cost-cutting programs. Some withered away as younger readers fled paper pages for the internet, but behind them, below them, in their shadow, regarded as puny and insignificant back then, even though their scopes kept ups and prodding the print media, were bloggers, alternative media such as small magazines and websites. The glorious indie media movement, progressive radio, even the text messaging had helped organize the first great Latino march of the immigrant rights movement at the beginnings in April 2006. And we're going to take a real quick break, and I'm going to come back and read another section. This thing's huge. I've only gotten through a quarter of it. So we're going to just take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to skip down a bit because there's a bit more about Bush that I just absolutely love. So we'll see you straight after this. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head-On Radio Network, and we'll have a little bit more on flashing on the future. I don't know. But anyway, we'll be back right after this.
Nobody knows you.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head-On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head-On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio
at the Head-On Radio Network.
Now get back to work.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. I'm reading this piece from truthout.org on mammalism. But anyway, this is as though someone in 2025 looking back on the first quarter of this new century. And there are many different sections to this. They talk about the Latin American Renaissance and some other things, but there's a section towards the end called The Principles of Change, and I just think that this is fantastic. It says, a mature oak tree always looks significant, and when we look at it, we're willing to respect acorns. But the rest of the time, the seeds of the next big thing are just trodden upon and overlooked. The ideas that made our era and pulled us back from the brink, the stakes that went through the hearts of the dinosaurs and the more incremental forces that rendered them extinct, were all at work in the 1990s. They just didn't look very impressive yet, and people were intimidated by the heft of those dinosaurs and swayed by their arguments. The world court and related human rights, environmental rights, and criminal courts became more powerful presences as the sun set on the era of nation-states. Multiple changes often combined into scenarios impossible to foresee. For example, the belated U.S. recognition in 2011 that the International Criminal Court did indeed have war crimes jurisdiction over Americans coincided with the worldwide anti-incarceration movement. This explains why, for example, former President Bush the Younger, extradited from Paris and found guilty in 2013, was never imprisoned but sentenced to spend the rest of his life working in a Fallujah diaper laundry. People who are still bitter about his reign are bitter, too, that the webcams there suggest, even at his advanced age, he still enjoys his work that accords so well with his skill set. His assets, along with those of his vice president, and Halliburton Bechtel Exxon and the other war profiteers were famously awarded to the Vietnamese Buddhist Commission for the Iraqi Transition. After almost a decade of the bitterest bloodshed, Iraq too had broken into five nations. But by this time, so many nation-states were reorganized into more coherent units that the Iraqi transition, led by the Women's Alliance of Islamic Feminists, nicknamed Islamofeminists, was surprisingly peaceful when it finally came. As I've said many times, the future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed. Said the sci-fi novelist William Gibson in 1999, in retrospect, the arrival of the age of mammals should have been easy to foresee. On every front, family structure and marriage, transportation, energy and food economies, localized power structures, everyday life was being reinvented in the late 20th century and early 21st centuries. From India to Indiana, an interlocking set of news began to emerge and coalesce, becoming in the end the new common sense that new generations of thinkers and activists were guided by. Who now thinks it's radical to advocate the decentralization is better than consolidated power, that capitalism's worldview is vicious and dishonest, that the public matters as much or more than the private, that enforced homogeneity is not a virtue either on a farm or in society? And just the vision of George W. Bush working in a diaper laundry, wow, it's just too much fun. And please, there's a link to this piece on today's show post at headonradionetwork.com, and I've only read about a third of it, and I really suggest that you go and read it, because it's an interesting theoretical roadmap, and there's a lot of truth in this, that, you know, we've already planted the seeds for the great change. And the oak tree analogy is so very true. You know, we've been, those of us who, you know, were either right on things like renewable energy and social consciousness, and those of us that woke up to it in the later years like myself, you know, we know we're right. And eventually, everybody else is going to catch up because they're not going to have a choice. And I think it's really interesting, the idea of the death of the nation state. And I've heard this talked about in other circles as well, that the way the globe is divided and organized just really doesn't kind of work. And this whole local thing, you know, I think Sarge and I were talking about it yesterday. You know, people on their own, without going and you know, making official boycotts on the major grocery store chains or you know, anything like that, they are on their own going to their, waiting till Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning, going to their local farmer's market. You know, not buying their meat and produce from the chains who abuse farmers and set false price ceilings and all this kind of nonsense, where, you know, we have a better connection to our planet, the food we eat. I mean, this has got to be one of the biggest issues. And that crap that came out yesterday about the fact that, you know, no special labeling for cloned animals used for food is a bunch of crap. Because, you know, and it was proven in the UK, when genetically modified foods, as in fruits and vegetables and whatnot, entered into the UK, the public wouldn't buy it. It had to be labeled, and they couldn't sell it. And this idea that no special labeling is needed is just a way to take choice away from the people. And I think that's just shocking. But it's also a sign of where we're at the moment. So, you know, I really, really hope as we wrap up 2006, which unfortunately has been another just awful year for this planet of ours, you know, and seems like, you know, every year we think that it's going to be better next year, and I have to go with that same kind of thought process, or else, you know, none of us could go on. None of us could go on dealing with, you know, outside forces running our lives. You know, I really like to know what I'm eating. I know it seems really simple, but I really like to know what I'm eating. And, you know, what can I say? Continue to shop locally. Get to know your local producers. I think that this is so important. And supporting your local producers. And, you know, it's funny. I might pay a little bit more in the end. But for some reason, I'm not feeling the effects. I'm getting better nutrition because the food's real. Things last longer. And I did an A/B test not long ago. I grabbed an organic tomato, and I grabbed manufactured tomato, you know, and I let them both sit in the fridge. The organic one lasted twice as long as the factory farmed one. You tell me what that means. All right, folks, we're running out of time. And yes, Agnes, and it tastes so, so, so much better. I'm telling you. Try your bloody favorite breakfast cereal with some unhomogenized whole organic milk, and it's a whole new thing for breakfast. All right, everybody, have a great New Year's. You know, survive your hangovers, the whole thing. And for the final time this year, thank you to the Mid-Atlantic Council of Carpenters for all their support that they give this network. Thank you to my producer, Agnes, and my sometimes producer, Bob Kincaid, who, you know, constantly just do a wonderful job producing this program for me. Thank you to our mods and our bloggers who keep things on the website just happening, and the research that Treble and the News Ninja send to us, you just can't beat it with a stick, I'm telling you. And Peter Godbold, love you, mate. You're super. And to all my mates here at the Horn, Bob, Bruce, Guy, Mark, Joe, Dr. Bill, love you. Have a great 2007, and we'll see you next year. Be good. Be green. See ya.
You make a grown man cry. You make a grown man cry. You make a grown man cry.
About the oil, the gasoline, I ride smooth, she's a clean machine.
So I started up. Well, start again, all you got. I take the beat and beat with the rising melody. Even rough it up.
Rough it up.
Hey, if you like it, take a slide it up. Come on, slide it up now. Grown man cry.
Cry.
Don't make a grown man cry.
Cry.
Don't make a grown man cry.
Cry. My eyes dilate, my lips go green, my hands are greasy. She's a bean machine.
You make a dead man come. You make a
148 killings in 1982 could have his sentence carried out either today or tomorrow. A U.S. military officer who spoke on condition of anonymity says that Saddam will be hanged before the start of the Eid religious holiday, which begins this weekend. The Iraqi government says it is consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of the religious festival. They say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow Hussein's execution. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says, quote, our forces stay at a constant state of high readiness in Iraq, end quote. The White House declined to comment on the timing of Saddam's execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush and First Lady Laura Bush were moved to an armored vehicle on their ranch today during a tornado weather alert. Bush is in Texas meeting with top aides and policymakers to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. In Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister entered the capital today, a day after an Islamic movement's fighters retreated ahead of his Ethiopian-backed troops. He was welcomed by thousands of cheering, waving, applauding residents of the city. Although his visit is meant to symbolize the government's victory, fighting is likely to continue. In Saudi Arabia, more than 2 million Muslims stood on Mount Arafat today to pray for peace. Security is tight for this year's Hajj. Officials are trying to avoid the kind of stampede that killed 400 pilgrims last year. Up to 500 people are feared dead after a large explosion occurred at a ruptured oil pipeline in the Nigerian village of Lado. The explosion happened after locals attempted to recover fuel from an underground pipeline punctured by thieves in order to siphon fuel into a tanker. In New Orleans, 7 policemen have been indicted for killing 2 citizens and wounding 4 others as the victims attempted to evacuate in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The second major snowstorm in a week is hitting Colorado today, dumping another 2 feet of snow, shutting down highways and forcing the cancellation of hundreds of flights at the Denver airport. The governor has declared a state of emergency and the National Guard is on standby. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A giant ice shelf the size of 11,000 football fields has snapped free from Canada's Arctic, scientists say. The massive ice broke away 16 months ago from the coast of Ellesmere Island, about 500 miles south of the North Pole. Conservationists blame global warming. Too many kids are fat by preschool, says new research out today. One important predictor of a pudgy preschooler was whether the child was still using the bottle at the age of 3. For hundreds of thousands of minimum wage workers around the country, the new year brings a raise. 7 states are raising the minimum wage. The federal minimum is currently $5.15 an hour. The new wages will go as high as $7.50 an hour. Apple Computer has cleared Chief Executive Steve Jobs and the rest of its current management of misconduct involving stock option grants, despite Jobs' awareness of favorable grant dates. The company said Friday it has, quote, complete confidence, end quote, in the executive team, though it also acknowledged the backdating of thousands of option grants. 14,000 striking workers at Goodyear Tire and Rubber have voted to accept a 3-year contract. The agreement closes a Texas factory. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.95 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 38 points at 12,463, the NASDAQ was down 10 points at 2415, and the S&P 500 was down 6 points at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Chris.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Whoa, howdy. What shall we call this? Hang 'em High Friday? I refer, of course, to Saddam Hussein, who either is or is not getting his neck stretched at this point in time. And the fact that, as usual, this is turning into a horribly embarrassing blunder for the Bush administration. Am I going to sit here and tell you that somehow or another, somewhere along the way, Saddam didn't earn something along these lines? No. No, I'm not. But my God, I mean, there's stupid, and then there is stupid. This is, after all, the eve of one of the two great Muslim feast periods. Eid al-Fitr, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, follows the end of Ramadan. And then there's Eid al-Ahad. I'm not at all sure. And that's upon us. And it is a feast day that marks or commemorates the near sacrifice by Abraham of, the Muslims claim it was Ishmael. In the Western tradition, it was the near sacrifice of Isaac. In either instance, it is a case of really, really, really bad parenting. You're so psychotic that you actually hear God talking to you, and you think that, and you got one kid, and Abraham was what, 100 and some odd, when God or somebody finally knocked up his 90-something-year-old wife. I just don't even want to think about the Yeah, Agnes is over here with the fingers in the ear doing the la 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 la. Stretch marks? 90-some-odd-year-old stretch marks? So, anyway, Abraham finally manages to get a son, and that son, depending on which mythical tradition you buy into, or none at all. Thank you, Chuck. I'll take C, none of the above. God starts talking to Abraham. Hey, buddy, come here. Here's the deal. You know that son that I've promised you all these years that I finally gave you? You know, the cute little kid over there? Yeah. The one tinkling on the bushes? Go kill it. Okay, God, I'll do that because I'm your faithful servant. Well, this is a high holy feast commemorating the fact that God turned around and said, just jagging you. We haven't done a prayer meeting in a while, so I guess in a way we're sort of making up for lost time. But no, you know the story. Abraham takes his son up to the altar and gets ready to slit his throat as a sacrifice to the loving, compassionate, and merciful God. You know, the story is there to be read in both the Quran and the Old Testament, the Hebrew holy books. And it's always told from in this sort of third-person omniscient point of view. And it's, of course, never told from the standpoint of a little boy whose entire world, the father who fills his entire vision and all of his hopes and dreams, it's never told from that little boy's standpoint, the little boy that God isn't talking to. There's some sick and twisted stuff in so-called holy scripture. Noah's offspring, daughters-in-law, getting Noah all messed up and doing him. And then there's, Lot leaving Sodom, and after Lot's wife has been turned into a pillar of salt. You ever notice how we just talk about this kind of stuff? And then there's Leda and the Swan. You know, if it's Greek mythology, and then Narcissus was looking at himself in the pool and he turned into a sweet potato or something. And we go, ha 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 ha, oh, those crazy Greeks. But when it comes to ancient Hebrew history, we say things like, and Lot, after they left Sodom, and Sodom was being destroyed, and his wife turned around and got turned into a pillar of salt. As if it happened! No, but anyway, there's that disgusting story, because after the pillar of salt business, and things aren't looking exactly rosy for Lot's progeny, they're holed up in a cave, if you recall. And Lot's daughters say, hey, I got an idea. Let's get Daddy liquored up and do him. No, really. Really. So, yeah, there's some gross stuff in the ancient storytelling, and most of it, somewhere along the way, probably had a meaning. It really, honest to God, probably had a meaning once upon a time for the culture that cranked it out. Maybe that culture was so barbaric that they needed a warning story that just created a collective ew in the entire society, like Lot and his icky daughters. And maybe that culture needed some sort of a myth to explain the rotten circumstances in which they lived. Oh, yeah, we're walking. Oh, look, more desert. Oh, look, another desert. Next morning. What are we going to do today, Dad? We're going to walk in the desert some more and chase some goats. Why are things rotten like this? Oh, well, you see, son, you shouldn't complain. Because, you know, it could be worse. I mean, there was Abraham, after all. I mean, you've already had your morning bowl of putrid gruel. And you're complaining? Why, Abraham's little boy almost got his throat slit for God. Really, Dad? Yeah, had him up on the altar, had the knife in his neck and everything, till God finally went, ha-ha! Really had you going, didn't I, Abraham? Yeah, yeah. I'm a big kidder. And so, anyway, in the story, in the Hebrew account, it's Isaac, and at the last minute, God does, in fact, say to Abram, ha-ha, made you look. I was just kidding. Look, there's a ram over there in the bushes. Why don't you sacrifice the ram instead? And in the Muslim account, it's Ishmael and not Isaac. Go figure. Sibling rivalries. Ugh. I mean, you know, we see it in our own family. Sibling rivalry. It's ugly. It's not quaint and it's not cute. It's nasty. So anyway, there's a feast, and it's a big feast, and the best livestock gets slaughtered. And you barbecue it, or grill it, or roast it, or parboil it, or gently braise it, or make Hassenpfeffer out of it, or something. And then the part that God wants, I guess God likes the smell of food, because he never comes down and eats any of it. No, he just likes the smell. And in the Muslim tradition, you take what you've sacrificed and burned or roasted or parboiled or whatever, grilled and, you know, braised, and you pass it around to all your neighbors, and you make absolutely certain that that everybody gets some of the sacrificial food, especially the poor. And that is what is getting ready to go now. That's on the Muslim High Holy Day calendar. Now. And we are what? Participating in and acquiescing in the execution of Saddam Hussein. Now. Do you find that a little bit disturbing? I mean, it's, for all intents and purposes, it's like killing rabbits on Easter. Not a word, Agnes. I mean, there, you know, it's like going out and shooting a fat guy in a red suit on Christmas. There's some stuff that it, and there's some stuff that is just stupid to do. And hanging Saddam right now is just proof positive that we don't have a daggum clue. Not a clue. Not that there was anything about the trial of Saddam that had anything about it even remotely resembling a so-called fair trial. God, it was worse than the OJ trial if you watched any of it. So that's where we are today. And some news, his defense counsel says, look, they've already come and got him. And one U.S. source says, yeah, they came and got him. And another government source says, nah, they didn't come and get him yet. Meanwhile, somebody in the Prime Minister's office says, you know, we're waiting for an opinion from the High Holy Dude on whether or not we can make Saddam be the sacrifice for the feast. This is embarrassing. As an American, I am embarrassed that we would be so inept. Of course, it's also worth noting that if we had any integrity about us at all, we wouldn't be having this discussion. Because after all, if we were serious about what a war criminal, what a monster of anti-human conduct Saddam Hussein is or was, then none of this would have happened in Iraq. The Hague was a wonderful place for Slobodan Milosevic, and was a direct, and his journey thence was a direct result of our action in the former Yugoslavia. And we put him on trial, and we participated in the trial. I know there are wing nuts out there. We don't participate in trials in The Hague, dang it. Yeah, we do. We provided part of the prosecution team for Slobodan Milosevic. And Slobodan Milosevic died in his prison cell there. Now, if the Hague was good enough for Slobodan Milosevic, why was it not good enough for Saddam Hussein? If first and foremost the Iraqi government was, if this was about setting up, bringing democracy and frisbees and wheat checks to Iraq, shouldn't we expect that the fledgling government, one of the first things the fledgling government would want to do would to be a participant in world judicial activities? Is that just crazy? But no, Saddam is under U.S. guard, but it's Iraqi custody. If he's under our custody, I mean, this is just a question. If he's in our custody, isn't he a prisoner of war? This is just screwed up from the ground up. Oh, and by the way, for anybody paying attention, not that I've got my magic eight ball out. I checked it earlier. It said answer hazy. Check again later. But don't we expect Iraq to just go absolutely woohoo, gaga, some with glee and joy and some with absolute the insane anger? No, not even, well, when Saddam is executed. And not to, and again, not with the magic eight ball or anything, but do you remember back before the November elections, if you're a regular of this program, you probably do. Back before the November elections, everybody was saying, oh, look, you know, they're announcing the verdict of Saddam is in and he's going to hang. And there were those among us who said, well, look, that must be the October surprise. And I took one look at the scheduling of it, and I pointed something out. And that was the fact that the October surprise was not that the verdict was in against Saddam. No, 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 no. The October surprise lay in the fact that the verdict for Saddam had been in for a month or more. More than. And that, as a function of that, had the Saddam verdict been announced when it was actually adduced, then Saddam would have been getting executed sometime around the November elections. And Iraq, as we would have been going nutso crazy, you know, rioting in the streets right at the time of the elections. And it was an attempt to prevent that. That was the October surprise. And I pointed out about long about that time that we could expect Saddam's execution at a timing, a time frame roughly equivalent to what is going on now. And here we are. So, without too much shameless self-promotion, I point out again, you can wait for it to be reported by the mainstream press corps. That's C-O-R-P-S-E. Or you can listen to this program and the other programs on the Head On Radio Network and be months and months ahead of the curve. You know, it's easy. And this isn't, you know, it's not magic. It's just rational thought. If you step back from all the right-wing palaver and all the right-wing mouthing that gets done by the so-called professional media, then it's pretty easy to figure some of this stuff out. So there we have it. The embarrassment that is the execution, you want to call it execution, you want to call it slaughter, you want to call it murder. There are a lot of people out there who are calling it the martyrdom of Saddam Hussein, because you got it. Well, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. This would come as real news to any right-wingers hanging around. But there are literally millions of people in Iraq for whom Saddam was deemed a darn good leader. I know. It's as hard to fathom that as it is to understand that those 20% of Americans who still think that George Bush is God's guy on the ground and leading America to a glorious future. Oh, Jesus. Equally squirrely propositions, but in either instance, true. So that's where we find ourselves, and I welcome your comments. The phone number, you know, it's 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Minutes before the hour, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's go straight to the phones. Our good friend Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm rather ranting, to put it mildly.
Rantalicious? I think our good friend Bruce Birch coined that term.
Yeah.
Rantalicious.
I've been ranting about this for quite a while. Obviously, the Bush administration is too stupid to find their rear end with both hands, but I'm going to put it in language even they can understand.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Monosyllables.
Yeah. In the early 1800s, there was a bunch of guys by the, well, actually, mid-1800s, a bunch of guys by the name, you know, they were your average frontiersman, drunk. They shot good, but that, you know, they had tendency to beat their wives and so on and so forth.
Right.
They ended up in Texas, where they ended up becoming martyrs in the Alamo.
Well, there's that, yeah.
Yeah. Now, everybody in this country, especially in the state of Texas, remembers the Alamo.
Yeah.
If those men had not died in that mission, nobody would have known they ever existed.
Right, and Davy Crockett went down there in hopes of he had just been politically screwed by Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Nothing better to do, got his Tennessee Volunteers all together, and headed down there, hopefully, for the new life.
Right.
Didn't quite work out that way.
No. But the whole point behind the thing is most of the guys who died in the Alamo were total non-entities, except before their death. Now, there's a whole lot of people in Iraq and Iran and Syria and various and sundry other places because there are some people who would like to play patsy with other countries, just like we do,
mm-hmm.
who are going to have, the minute Saddam Hussein dies, he is going to become the best ruler that Iraq has ever had. Never mind what actually happened, that's what's going to be put out.
Yeah, he'll get the Gerald Ford treatment from in the Arab world.
You bet.
People that hated Saddam's guts in life will suddenly, well, he was a flawed man, but after all, blah, 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 he unified Iraq, he kept...
Within a month, he will be our great leader, Saddam. And that country is going to explode. This is a culture that believes not only in feuds, multi-generational feuds, and people better remember that, but they also believe in murders and suicide bombers.
Mm-hmm.
I put this up on the blog. If we, and make no doubt about it, if we are doing it, if we execute this man, we do it at our peril.
Yeah, we do. Wait, Susan, let's define our peril.
The U.S. population, not the leaders. They're too well guarded.
No, yeah, right. It's never danger it's all home on the range for George Bush, and never has heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. And it's always sunshine and lollipops for Condi Rice and a new pair of pumps out there on the horizon just waiting for her to find them. And it's always happy land for or I don't know Gun World or West World or whatever for Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
None of those people are gonna bear any of the brunt of this. But you know what? There's some mother's son from South Central L.A.
who's going to get his head blown off.
Yeah.
If he's lucky, because if he's not lucky, he's going to be captured and tortured to death.
You know, or a daughter from O'Fallon, Missouri.
Yeah. And sooner or later, this is what's going to happen. It's going to metastasize, and we will be having some poor sod on a plane headed for Jacksonville or Omaha, whatever, for a sales convention, selling bolts and nuts, get him and his plane blown out of the sky by a suicide bomber who is going to avenge his great leader Saddam.
Yeah.
Because that's the interesting part about their culture.
But, Susan, I thought we were fighting them over there so we wouldn't have to fight them here. Now we've created a scenario in which a group of people who never bore us any ill will in the first place now wants to come here and take out a little bit of blood revenge.
Oh, yeah, and they think, just like the Scots do, if they themselves can't hit you, their descendants will.
And they will, and it's a story that will be told around the fire by fathers to sons to grandsons to great-grandsons unto generations yet undreamt of.
They never forgive. They never forget. And people, brace yourself. It's going to get really, really ugly.
Well, beyond guys with suicide dynamite belts on, Susan, how about the women of Iraq? You know, what? Regardless of what else you say about him, a woman in Iraq could go down the street in a smart Western ensemble, go to work at the local pharmacy, or go to work as a professor at the local university, or go to work as a chemical engineer at the local whatever plant.
If I was a woman in Iraq, I would be making plans to get the crud out of there and go to Britain, go to Australia, go anyplace but the United States.
Yeah, and because now there's a government coming along that wants to make sure that they have to wear a beekeeper suit.
Yeah.
and can't walk more than 12 paces behind their nearest male relative.
Yeah, and, you know, right up there with the Taliban. I would be making plans to run like crazy.
Well, I guess my point is that it's not just men, but the women who used to enjoy freedom in Iraq, a hell of a lot more free than they're going to be in the beekeeper suits. Why would we be surprised that they would be angry as well?
I should hope.
How about that 2,000-year-old Christian community in Baghdad?
Oh, heavens, if they're smart, they'll leave.
Well, we've killed, but Susan, we've killed most of them.
Jewish community.
Yeah, there was that. You know, who in Iraq doesn't have the right to be incredibly angry with us?
Oh.
You know, that we
I can't think of a one.
Yeah, we call it freedom, but it looks a heck of a lot like civil war to them.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't 50 bodies or 100 bodies a day being found, you know, shot in the back of the head in Saddam's Iraq. Now, I know that pisses off the right-wingers, but it's just a fact.
It's true. And, you know, give it a week, a month at the very least, at the very most. Saddam will be viewed in Iraq as the best leader they ever had, and they're going to be out for blood. American blood. I don't know, I pity those poor soldiers over there.
I do too. And I pity their parents and all of their loved ones. I had a story in the stack yesterday. I haven't been able to find it again. Another one of those Lieutenant Aaron Watata types. This guy served 4 years in the United States military, 2 tours in Afghanistan. One of those tours was part of Operation Anaconda.
Mm-hmm.
He was the subject of an entire segment of, I believe, a book or perhaps even a documentary in which he was pinned down under fire for 18 continuous hours. He's come home. He's starting a family. He's waiting on the entry of his Ecuadorian fiancé to the United States. He is in law school. Guess what? He was released from the military a few months back. George Bush's people have gotten in touch with him and said, son, you're coming back whether you like it or not. And he has said, I don't like it and I'm not.
Good for him.
You know, I wish I could find his name again because he deserves our support. At what point do we stop asking these insane sacrifices on the part of ordinary Americans for policy decisions that have nothing to do with an ordinary American's life?
I don't know, but I do know we need to keep the pressure on Congress and keep yapping at them. Defund this war.
And yet, I don't know, I know you're around, you surf the news quite extensively during the day, Susan. Did you catch the op-ed piece by Senator Joseph I. Lieberman in today's Washington Post?
No, but I can guess what it said.
Go ahead. We'll see how your magic eight ball's working tonight.
We need to put more troops in there. Probably just about the same amount or more than McCain wants. After all, we must finish the job.
We cannot risk the consequences of losing the war in Iraq.
We lost it before we ever started it.
Oh, don't you just despise these people?
Oh, God. Nah. Pardon me, I'm going to go scream a lot. I shall not bother to do that in your ear. I know it.
I understand. I'm pretty close to it, too.
Yeah. You have a real nice evening. I know that's going to be difficult.
I'm
going
to try, and you have a safe and healthy New Year's weekend.
Oh, I'm going to. Hubby and I have a tradition. We stay home.
Right. After all, I, like I said, I remember my buddy who refers to New Year's Eve as amateur night.
Yeah, we don't drink, so we don't figure in there's any reason to go out and party, so we...
And it's kind of artificial. It's kind of artificial, too.
Yeah.
Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, who has, I mean, if you like historical perspective with a little twist of humor, it's one of the funniest places on the web. The guy is as smart as can be, and he points out in a post, I think, from yesterday, that we're off by, this calendar's off by 4 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
So the millennium thingy was in 1997, if you're, you know, it's all artificial.
Oh yeah.
For my purposes, I always kind of disliked the idea of starting a new year at the rottenest time of year. If it was up to me, New Year's Day would be March 1st.
That's not a bad thing to have. Oh, by the way, here's something else to run your blood pressure up. There's a post on the blog. It's called "Why Is HUD Bulldozing Public Housing Apartments in New Orleans When It's Cheaper to Fix Them?"
Oh, I saw that.
The Bushies are at it again.
Well, right, because we can keep those people that semi-forcibly removed from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
We can keep their votes nice and watered down in lily white places like Utah.
I think if they won't let them back in New Orleans, what they have to do is all move to Utah en masse.
Oh, there are conservative Utah people that are getting the fan tods at the mere thought of that right now.
It's never going to happen. I wouldn't want it to happen, but because these are these people's homes. But if you're going to fantasize about something that will really, really get their panties in a wad, that'll do it.
Yeah, pretty much. Susan, thank you very kindly.
You have a great great New Year's Eve, you and Agnes.
Well, I think we'll be sharing your tradition. We'll be staying home.
Well,
if I'm lucky and I don't make her incredibly mad at me, I might actually get kissed at midnight, but, you know, that's the best part.
Well, yeah. Never hurts. Be nice to Agnes. She might actually kiss you.
Right. It's much better than getting bit.
Right.
Right.
You have a night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. What am I going to say? There are bite marks. Just, you know, I mean, there are times that I just open the door and fling in chocolate. And, you know, a little bit later, poke my head and, you know, do the Laurence Olivier thing, poking my head in the door. Is it safe? Is it safe? And if nothing gets thrown at the door, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But, the stuff that's out there. On the 4G. The Ford orgy continues. I guess the beginning of 5 days? 5 days of public remembrances of Gerald Ford began in California today? And just by... I looked, and it tells you a little bit about the demographic of people using YouTube. I looked, trying to find anything of Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford on YouTube.
Yeah.
It wasn't there. However, something else was. And we might as well have a little giggle as we move into the top of the hour. Uh, 1997, Saturday Night Live piece by... Dana Carvey as Tom Brokaw. You don't have to have the video to appreciate the humor of this. But now I'm still convinced of the correctness of my position, especially having reconsidered it from last night. All the problems, all the excesses of the Bush administration really do come back to Gerald Ford. Something I posted earlier today in the way of a comment town. He was midwife to the birth of all the problems that bedevil us with the presidency today. But of course that must be tempered by the understanding that we're only talking about imperial presidencies in terms of Republican presidencies, because, you know, a Democrat, wow, Democrat has consensual oral sex and he gets impeached. You know, it drives the right-wingers crazy when we talk about that. That wasn't about sex. It was about him not being honest and stuff. And Mena Airport. Mena Airport. Nah, it was about sex. Because, you know, that's the way it is with Republicans. They're so kinked up. But the problems we have with the Bush administration presidency today were birthed in the Ford administration. And, of course, Dick Cheney was his chief of staff. I saw a photograph of Ford and Cheney and Rummy today, and Cheney in profile. You want something creepy? If you find this photograph, I had to look twice because, honest to God, Dick Cheney in profile looked like Paul Begala. I kid you not. I guess he hadn't had heart attacks 1 through 17 yet, and that didn't put that permanent imperial penguin-esque sneer on his face. But at any rate, let's since we're going to have 5 days, oh Lord God, Billy Bob, 5 days of 4G, let's at least have a little bit of a giggle. 1997, Saturday Night Live, Dana Carvey as Tom Brokaw.
All right, who are we up to?
We're still on presidents. Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford? Well, he's in good shape.
Just covering our bases, Tom. You never know. Okay.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today at the age of 83.
Okay, good. And one for next year.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today at age 84.
A little sadder.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today at age 84.
That was good.
Okay, what now?
Now let's do one for if he's shot.
Well, what are the chances of that?
We're just covering contingencies.
I mean, it just seems like Gerald Ford.
Look, you're the one who wants to spend the whole winter in Barbados, okay?
All right.
Well, we got to get ready. We got to be ready with something just in case. All right, Tom?
All right. Gerald Ford shot dead today at age 83.
Add the word senseless.
All right. Gerald Ford shot dead today at the senseless age of 83.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Gerald Ford senselessly shot dead at the age of 83.
Good. Okay, now suicide.
What?
Just read it.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today after jumping out of an office building senselessly.
It's a nice touch. Okay, moving on.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today from an overdose of crack cocaine.
Good. Next.
All right. Stunning news from Michigan, as former President Gerald Ford was chopped into little bits by the propeller of a commuter plane.
Good. One take.
All right. We got it?
No. We got eaten by wolves.
What? Now, come on.
Just read it.
Gerald Ford isn't going to be eaten by wolves.
Taft was.
Really? Taft?
Yeah.
All right. Tragedy today as former President Gerald Ford was eaten by wolves. He was delicious. Now, that's just superfluous. I mean, you know.
It's a former president, Tom. What are you saying? He's not delicious?
All right, all right. All right, fine. What's next?
The double story.
All right, all right. A fireball destroyed France today, and Gerald Ford is dead. Now, what are the odds of that? Now, come on.
Fine, fine. We'll get Stone Phillips to do it. You know, I'm sure Stone Phillips would be thrilled to break a story like that.
All right, let's keep moving.
Okay.
Stunning news from Yorba Linda today, as Richard Nixon's corpse climbed out of its grave and strangled Gerald Ford.
Next.
Gerald Ford was mauled senselessly by a circus lion in a convenience store.
Good. Next.
All right. Gerald Ford is dead today, and I'm gay.
What? What? That'd be a huge story. Ford dying and you coming out?
But I'm not gay.
Today you're not gay, you know. Then one day you wake up, you like men, Gerald Ford dies, and we're screwed. Everyone's hearing about it from Dan Rather.
All right, all right, all right. All right, what's this for?
All right, this one is for if we're invaded by Zimbabwe.
Would I still be the anchor if Zimbabwe invaded us?
Yeah, if you break the Gerald Ford story, you will.
All right, all right. Ola Bombe, Hunga Dimbe, Gerald Ford. Ola Bombe, Ola Bumba, Bumba, Hula Humba, hey.
Very nice, very nice. A little sadder, please.
All right. Ola Bombe, Hungale, Dimba, Gerald Ford, Ola, Ola Bombe.
Oh, I'm good. Yeah, yeah.
You're gonna burn in hell.
No, I'm not. Gerald Ford is. I'm sorry. The best part of that. Shocking news from Yorba Linda today, as the corpse of Richard Nixon rose out of the grave and strangled Gerald Ford. That's really where it is at the end of the day, isn't it? It's the business with Richard Nixon. And that kind of crap doesn't get forgiven, and it doesn't deserve forgiveness. But as far back, you know, Dana Carvey, you know, as far back as 1997. Good God! Oh, I'm gonna watch that again after the show, because it's just funny. It's okay to laugh. There is tragedy aplenty in this world. You can laugh too. But for now, we're going to go to our top of the hour news break, see what's going on with the Quality News Network. See if Saddam, you know, how long do we need? Where's Chevy Chase? You know, good evening, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not. And, what was it? And Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead. Well, I guess Generalissimo Francisco Franco gets replaced by Gerald Ford? Or Saddam Hussein. Pick one. This is the Head On Radio Network. You're welcome to chime in with your thoughts at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Email rushes into bob@headonradio.com. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Quality News Network. Former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, sentenced to death for his role in 148 killings in 1982, could have his sentence carried out either today or tomorrow. According to the Associated Press, execution witnesses have already gathered in Baghdad's fortified Green Zone in final preparation for Saddam's hanging. A top Iraqi official says Saddam will be executed before 6 a.m. Saturday Baghdad time, which is 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here. The Iraqi government has readied all the necessary documents, including a red card, which ironically is an execution order introduced during his dictatorship. Saddam spoke with two of his half-brothers in his cell yesterday, giving them his personal belongings and a copy of his will. The Iraqi government, however, says it is still consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of the Eid, a religious festival set to begin this weekend. They say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. A suicide bomber killed at least 9 people near a Shiite mosque in Baghdad, and 32 tortured bodies were found across the country today as Iraq prepares for Saddam's execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow the execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush and First Lady Laura Bush were moved to an armored vehicle on their ranch today during a tornado weather alert. Bush is in Texas meeting with top aides and policymakers to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. In Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister entered the capital today, a day after an Islamic movement's fighters retreated ahead of his Ethiopian-backed troops. He was welcomed by thousands of cheering, waving, applauding residents of the city. Although his visit is meant to symbolize the government's victory, fighting is likely to continue. In Saudi Arabia, more than 2 million Muslims stood on Mount Arafat today to pray for peace. Security is tight for this year's Hajj. Officials are trying to avoid the kind of stampede that killed 400 pilgrims last year. The nation's 6 days of formal mourning of Gerald R. Ford started today with a private service for his family. Mrs. Ford will accompany her husband's body across the nation for a series of ceremonies that includes 2 funeral services in Washington and another in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he will be entombed on Wednesday. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Huell Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why he got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both?
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The second major snowstorm in a week is hitting Colorado today, dumping another 2 feet of snow, shutting down highways, and forcing the cancellation of hundreds of flights at the Denver airport. The governor has declared a state of emergency, and the National Guard is on standby. A giant ice shelf the size of 11,000 football fields has snapped free from Canada's Arctic, scientists say. The massive ice broke away 16 months ago from the coast of Ellesmere Island, about 500 miles south of the North Pole. Conservationists blame global warming. Scientists are concerned that the shelf will begin to melt, causing the water level to rise. Too many kids are fat by preschool, says new research out today. One important predictor of a pudgy preschooler was whether the child was still using a bottle at the age of 3. The Federal Communications Commission gave unanimous approval of AT&T's $85 billion purchase of Bell South Corporation. The mega merger creates the largest phone company in the United States. A Chinese spokesman says 132 million Chinese now use the Internet, a 30% increase this year. The surge has increased online commerce in the country. The communist regime continues to censor Internet content and punish users who attempt to access sites not approved by the government. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.05 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 38 points at 12,463, the NASDAQ was down 10 points at 2415, and the S&P 500 was down 6 points at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, 5.5 minutes after the hour. Hour two of this Friday edition already underway. Programming note, I don't know if you were expecting us to be on the air Monday evening. And given the time that I've been away from the microphone, I probably should... Well, no, it's New Year's Day. And there's cabbage to be cooked and black-eyed peas and Hoppin' John. Well, you know, black-eyed peas, rice, you know, great sausage. Yeah, Hoppin' John. And corned beef and cabbage and silver dollars to be hidden in... Yeah, don't worry, we sanitize them first. Although, you know, I mentioned sibling rivalry a little bit ago. We learned that one the hard way. You know, when I was growing up, whoever got the silver dollar in their corned beef and cabbage was going to have good luck all year long. Well, the Munchkins, we tried that one year, and the three who didn't get the silver dollar were just surly about it. So, you know, the tradition kind of took a whipping there. Let's go to the phones. Peter joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I told Agnes I only needed just a second on the air to be really, really bad. And you remember, you know, I think the hanging of Sodom is a really bad mistake for Bush. Do you remember the photographs of Hussein in the prison cell in his underwear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you realize, of course, that was so Bush could determine who was the man. You know, when a person is hung...
No, you can't go from there to hung.
Oh, when you get hung, you know, sometimes there's an erection. I mean, it just happens. You never know which guys could do it. But if...
La, la, la.
I think it's going to be a terrible disaster for Bush because he's going to really be outdone. And I'm so sorry I had to call you and tell you that, Bob. But if I don't tell you, nobody will.
My eyes!
Okay. Well, you
surrender, Dorothy.
You just have a nice day now.
I won't even sleep now.
Bye.
Oh, that's cruel. Our good friend Bob is calling in from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. Bob? Okay. Jim? Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I don't know what Peter meant by that. I don't understand.
I'm certainly not going to try to explain.
Okay, then explain to me this. What were you talking about God getting somebody knocked up earlier in the program, Bob?
I don't know. Were you listening?
Yeah, I was listening, and I heard what you said. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I just don't understand why you get in these moods and why you get on these rants and you are so anti-clerical, anti-religious, and anti-God and anti-anything. But I will tell you this, as one friend to another, I hope that one day God will see fit to change your heart.
Oh, Lordy. Jim, not again. I'm not up for it tonight. I'm
not.
Jim, I don't have a lot of truck with barbarian mythology, okay? I don't have a lot of truck with Odin or Thor.
I don't have a lot of truck
or,
with apostates either.
You know, basically
an apostate.
I'm a punctuation mark? Did he just call me a punctuation mark?
He called you an apostate.
Isn't that the thing that you get checked out when you turn 40? Oh, God. See, that's the problem. Biblical literalists. You know, if, for instance... You look at the story of Cain and Abel. There's a rational explanation for Cain and Abel. You know, Cain was a farmer, and he brought some cucumbers and put them on the altar, and some squash, and maybe, no, there were no cucumbers, and there were no beans to speak of, no squash. Okay, he put rutabagas on the altar, and God wasn't up for rutabagas that day. And along comes Abel, who is a hunter-gatherer, and he puts a big hunkin' haunch of bloody meat on the altar, and God was pleased. God is clearly not a vegetarian. No, that's not the lesson. The lesson from Cain and Abel is a warning to a society that is transitioning from a hunter-gatherer society to a sedentary agricultural society. And that part of it is borne out by science. There have been studies of what few hunter-gatherer societies remain on planet Earth, and they actually expend fewer calories to survive than sedentary agricultural societies. So it's not about fratricidal strife, and it's not about whether or not God likes barbecue better than he does his veggies. It's a societal warning about how you exist on the planet. And I don't know if it was an angel or God or some stranger wandering through the wadi that banged old 92-year-old Sarah like a cheap Chinese gong. I don't know. I suspect it's probably answer D, none of the above. Because the meaning was there for the culture that had the story. And 2, 3, 4, 5,000 years later, we're trying to ascribe meaning to a meaningless event. It could be the ultimate, like I said, it could be the ultimate boogeyman story. Hey, kid, quit complaining, or I'll take you up on the mountain like Abraham did with Isaac, and I'll slit your throat. You better hope God's hanging out there ready to say, just kidding. You never know when God's going to, you're on my last nerve. Don't bother me. You never know when I might just hear God talking to me and have to go kill you. But that, in a biblical literalism. To the phones, our good friend Bob is back with us. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend.
How are you?
I'm sad.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. My father passed away on Wednesday of this.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Bob.
Well, that's unexpected because he was 93.
93?
Yeah, and he served this nation in World War II, and he was a good man. And I would like for those that listen and understand the service that people give to know his name.
Sure.
You know, his name was Christian Leland Sylvester Matson. And my name is Robert Leland Matson. And I will never tolerate any man that comes on to face another man and say that he knows more about God or more about life than a man that lived for those many years, or before, and centuries before, Bob. You have brought it up, and you have spoken so eloquently, and people, listen, there is no way that you can know God until you meet God, and you don't know God, and you cannot preach God, you can't tell other people who God is. All you can do is talk from your anus, because all you are sad little wogs. And I'm speaking to that sad little wog that spoke before me. I will not tolerate a man that does not understand understand that he is not God, and he can never preach God unless he is God, and that's the truth, Bob. There is nothing beyond that. And my father was a good man, a decent man, but not a righteous man. He was never righteous, because, hey, he brought me up, and I am not a nice or decent man. I am an intolerant man, and I am intolerant of people that think they know God or speak to God. I am sick to death of these preachers and teachers and thinkers and those that believe they have the, what, inside track to God. There have been billions of these arseholes that have come before us, Bob, that have always preached that they know God, and I'm sick of them.
Well, it's just, Bob, it's a way to get weaker people to follow stronger people.
Stupid.
I don't know if you remember when we talked with Bishop Carlton Pearson. I was very impressed with that man.
Yes.
Because he said, look, we have been the church has been engaged in a fraud for however many thousands of years, selling tickets out of hell and into heaven.
A fraud. A lie. And if these liars keep lying like they do, all they will do is lie us all into hell, if there is one. And, Bob, I don't believe there is one. I do not believe in anything that I hear. I don't believe in half of what I see. I only believe in the love that I can generate from my own heart. I do not give. I do not take. I just accept, Bob. I just accept people as they are. And some people are impossible to even tolerate. And there's times that you have to tell them, I'm tired of it. Just go away. Do not come back and haunt me no more. Be gone, thou foul spirit. And there are those that believe that they have the ticket to heaven. And they don't even know if heaven exists. They just hope that heaven exists like the rest of us. And I pray to this God, any God, that my father and my mother, though they be dead, rest in that heaven and not in that hell that all these preachers and teachers try to push on us, Bob. I pray that they rest in the love of this sweet and innocent child, okay?
Yeah.
Whatever you want to name it. You know, I don't care. This one that came here to teach us to love one another.
Yeah.
And Bob.
Yeah, Bob.
My friend, Bob. I love you. I love myself. And I don't mean that just kind of, you know.
No, it's not said lightly, and I know that you.
True. And I love you. And I love your family. I love my own family. And I wish the world would just love one another. As whichever teacher, if it was Ishmael or, you know, I think about Ishmael when I think about Moby Dick, you know.
Call me Ishmael, yeah.
Yeah, okay? See, if you think about it, we are all on just a little marble floating around in space. We're just there. And like Carl Sagan said, we are made of
star stuff. Yeah, and that wonderful photograph shot, I think, wasn't it by Voyager, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually titled, if you Google a pale blue dot.
Yeah.
You get a picture of planet Earth from several millions of miles, and everything begins to recede into insignificance.
Yeah, it does, Bob. See, you got to recede yourself into insignificance and not believe that you are better than others.
Yeah.
And my father, Leland, oh, his name was Christian Leland Sylvester Matheson. Could you go through life with a handle like that?
They did. You know, parents did that to their children once upon a time. And
handled like that on him. But he was a Christian Leland Sylvester Matheson. He served in World War II, and he was a sergeant of the Air Force, and he flew missions over that hated country, that Nazi Germany that we have become. The United States of America has become the Nazi Germany of the 1940s. And don't you kid yourself, Bob. We have become the torturer nation. We have tortured people for what? Knowledge? No. Just a torturer, Bob. We have done things that God will never forgive this nation, nor the people of this nation, for ignoring. And it's ignorance. It's ignorance, Bob. It's ignorance of the truth that will take you to that hell that you want to go to. And go there then. Go there this nation. Go there and be gone and be for God.
Well, isn't that absence of truth, Bob? What we're dealing with all of the I mean, we don't have to worry about a hell in the afterlife. We're creating them as we go right here. Aren't we up to our knuckles in hell, Bob?
Yes, we are, Bob. And you know what? The only thing we can do to stop this hell is to love thee one another, Bob. And
yep.
I love thee. Love each other. Don't hate. Don't even look to hate. Just look to love. Do that. Look at your neighbor and say, okay, I don't like your politics, but I do love you. And so maybe I can speak with you as a person, like I speak to you, as another human being, one to another, and convey the fact that we are alone, but we're only alone as long as we think we are. But Bob, I'm never alone. I hear your voice. Are out there and speak to me on the air. You give me hope. And Bob, that's all we have is hope that we as a world, all the Iraqis, all those people, every one of them, and all the people of America, every one of them, we're a melting pot, Bob. We're a place where people can come and be of different heritage and yet be accepted. So let's accept each other, Bob.
Right.
And I good God, you wouldn't know how much I'm in my heart, I'm sad, but in my being, that center beyond my heart where I know you as a person, I am glad, and I am rejoicing, and I am just happy.
Well, and we celebrate.
Yeah, well,
we celebrate the life of your father, Bob.
No, and
no,
I celebrate you. No. My father was a good man. He wasn't a great man. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he was.
Yeah, it depends on how you define spectacular, Bob. I've come to terms with some of that in the course of my own existence. I used to think that to be great meant that you had to do something enough to maybe get a statue raised to you, or a building named after you, or a bridge, or a highway, or a library. That's just not true.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
That's part of the reason for what we do here, Bob. There is greatness all over this country that goes unacknowledged every day.
I heard some greatness coming out of that Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard some greatness coming out of her.
It goes unnoticed. It goes unremarked, and people aren't out there seeking to have it noticed. You know, it's the same. It's the same thing as courage. It ain't courage if you do it because you think somebody's watching.
That's a fact. You do it because you you just got to do it. You just do it. Like I, you know, I fix things. I you know, kind of, you know, I'm kind of handy. You know, the gal's down two values above me. Oh, here he comes again. He's the handyman. You know, and I'm at two value. I'm at a shopping center. Oh, it's the handyman. You know. And I love it when they say that, but they're just, you know, and they're sweethearts. They're really nice girls and check out. And they, you know, but they call me the handyman. That's kind of nice to have someone recognize you for what you do.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying to you is I recognize you for what you do, and you do a world of good to a very frightened and a very confused world right now, but guess what? We have more courage than they have lies, Bob, than they have misconceptions. And I think of these religio fascists as misconceptions. They keep giving the same kind of rhetoric, you know, the same kind of talk about how they know the truth. And, Bob, I don't know what the truth is, but I do know this, that when I speak to a man that speaks truly to me, I feel it. I really do. It's just...
Sure.
It's impossible to feel like you're, you know, being lied to when a man is speaking the truth. And when that George W. Bushevik or that Nazi, what was that gentleman said this earlier this evening? That this is a Nazi family, that even the father of the father, which is the grandfather of George Bush, was a supporter of Hitler.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
of course that
Prescott Bush, that filthy Nazi Prescott Bush.
Yeah, the guy was busted for trading with the enemies under the Trading with the Enemies Act, 1943. It's all documented. But you know, if you mention this to a right winger or a Republican, oh, you're just a Bush hater.
No, it's not.
It's our divorce, our disconnect, not yours, not mine. But the National Press Corps, their disconnect from any willingness to do any work whatsoever, Bob.
Bob, I love that. What you call it, the National Press Corps. That's kind of like this last corps, this corps that's going to pass through the White House. What's his name again?
Yeah, Ford.
I served under that. I mean, I will not tell you what we used to call it. But I served under that worthless piece of human dung, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I served under him, but I served under Jimmy Carter, too, and Jimmy Carter was the best president that this nation has ever, ever seen and has never, never recognized. James Earl Carter, I believe it is.
Yep.
Was the...
Well, I think he'll go down in history as a sort of a Marcus Aurelius president.
Yes, well, he was better than, you know, whatever came before him, except maybe that great Democrat, and his name was George Washington, not George Herbert or George W. Okay,
right.
His name was George Washington. So, okay. And he was a great president, but he was not perfect either. And realize, none of us are, Bob. I'm not perfect. My father was not perfect.
Wouldn't want to be.
Huh?
Wouldn't want to be.
No, I wouldn't want to be either.
Because you know what? If you're perfect, odds are you're a perfect moron.
Well,
because it means you have been incapable of learning over the course of your roads and your days. We make mistakes so that we may learn.
Well, he tell me it this way, Bob. Is it, you know, what's perfect? Have you ever heard of a perfect circle?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a perfect circle.
sure are. So, therefore, you know, that's the perfect circle. So maybe you are one if you're perfect. Just another art. Okay.
Well, Bob, our thoughts are with you. I've got to roll on, but
okay.
we're thinking of you, and we'll be you're in our hearts.
We'll be here, and hey, guess what, people? Don't think about yourself. Think about your neighbor, and do unto others as they would do unto you. Please, please, look for that part of the other person that you know that's better than you, and say, okay, I accept you. I don't like you, but maybe I can accept you, and therefore maybe we can tolerate one another. That would be nice, huh, Bob?
Yeah, it's a good start.
Yeah, well, let's start somewhere. Okay, good night, my friend.
All right, take care, Bob.
Up to the world, and peace to all, and hey, and to Agnes, get well, girl.
And maybe make 2007 a little bit less of a cesspool than 2006 turned out to be.
Please, do.
Bob, be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Bob in North Dakota. And Bob lost his father the day before yesterday at the age of 93. Keep Bob and his family, please, in your thoughts. Our good friend Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, actually, trying to think about it, just hope the medication holds out. You know.
Yeah, I only do what the voices in my head tell me to do.
I at least try to listen to ones that don't argue with the other ones. You know. Sometimes it's like listening to a chorus. No, you were talking a minute ago about religion. What I still always love to do to anybody who really wants to start preaching on your religion is I always tell them, "Who can enable Mary?"
Yeah, there is that little problem, isn't there?
It's like, you know, if we follow your scripture, which you tell us we have to literally, there ain't too many choices here.
Right, but see, then you start getting the rationalization. Did you ever speculate? And I know that there are people out there that just hate it when I get off on these tangents. But did you ever speculate on what it was that got Saul so all fired mad at David over Jonathan about?
No. But it's like you said, there are certain things that, like I say, if you sit down and talk about them, it's like you've always said. Think of it. You're talking about a religion that believes a snake came up and talked to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, say, you all don't like Wiccans. You all believe in magic. So don't sit there and tell me. You believe
right.
The bush was talking to somebody while it was burning.
Well, I remember I had one professor at one time, and I don't know the truth or falsity of this. But I was told, he told us, that the Hebrew word the Hebrew word shatan, mm-hmm. Satan, lawyer, means lawyer.
Well, you know, it's one of those things.
So Eve got lawyered up.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, it's like we talked about one time. You know, it's one of these things. How can you trust something where you find out that after you've been studying on it a little bit here and there, is that, oh, by the way, there are certain books that over the 2,000-3,000 years, they've said those books don't count. Sorry, we have to rip those chapters out because we don't like them.
Well, the Council of Nicaea did a whole bunch of that don't count.
Yeah. The whole Gnostics and all that, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, folks, we have to read the whole
thing. And yet, oddly enough, some of the reality of Yeshua still creeps through. I was having a discussion with someone not too long back about the business of the rich. And my question was, you know, he goes to great trouble to explain there's the business about the young rich man who comes to him and says, I've done everything right. What do I have to do to yada, yada, yada? And he says, go and take all of your stuff and sell it and give the money to the poor and follow me. And the young man goes away, and all the Bible says, he went away and he was aggrieved, for he had many cool things. So, yeah, and there's all kinds of meaning drawn out of that that's not in the text. And then you a couple of verses down, and he's saying, you know, verily, verily, I say unto you, it will be easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And in the discussion that I was having, There was all kinds of rationalization. Well, you know, it's no, rich people can get into hell. Yeah, sure. And, you know, that's where you get into the whole the Calvinist the bunch of crap about how, well, if you're rich, it's because God loves you better than the rest of the other. But then the fun part, where I think the real Yeshua comes creeping through, is a couple of verses later, where he's just gone through all this with the young man, and he's laid out the business about rich people, Luke. And then there's the, who is it? St. Peter stand, all the disciples are around him, and they go, yeah, but what's in it for us? What do we get? What are we going to get, Jesus? Tell us what we get. And, you know, if you're reading it carefully, Luke, you can almost see the disgust. The disgust of Yeshua is almost palpable when he turns to him and goes, you get crowns, okay? You all get crowns. You're going to have crowns. Everybody wants a crown. Come over here. I'm passing out crowns. You're all going to get a crown, and you're going to sit on my right hand, each and every last one of you. You'll all be the one right there on my right. And we're going to sit in judgment of the 12 tribes of Israel. You happy?
It's more like, didn't you understand when we started this what the end result was? It's like, I'm sorry, gang, the lottery was not at the end of this. You know?
Right.
But you know, it's like I've heard people talk about, you know, parallels with the stories like the stories of Gilgamesh.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Things like that. I mean, you know, it depends on what brand of it you want to take. I mean, like you said,
well, most of the really ancient stuff in the first five books of the Bible is a wholesale lift off of somebody else's holy scripture.
Oh, I wanted to tell you something before I forgot it. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You saw Sunday they're doing sci-fi is doing Twilight Zone all day.
Yeah.
And I saw that one of them I didn't see the advertisement for it yet, but I mean I saw it in the, you know, when they ran their little thing, is the one which I think is one of the best ones they ever did, is the one with Burgess Meredith as the librarian. Obsolete.
Oh, I love that one.
You know, and there are so many of his, you know, it's like that day when Keith Olbermann did the commentary, and he tied it back to that one episode of Twilight Zone. I tell you, sometimes when you sit down and you listen to it really carefully, and listen to some of Serling's, like when he does his little monologue at the end, sometimes his monologues are just so right on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you, and the man was talking about stuff that hadn't even happened yet. You know what I mean? Some of his monologues, essentially, I guess, is what they were.
Right.
I mean, some of these things were just, you know, you can apply them to now, you know, and just go, dang, he was prophetic.
Well, you know, there's the prophecy of Nostradamus and St. John or whoever it was that sat on the rock and lost his mind over Nero. And you know, he predicted things that were going on 2,000 years later. Crap. Okay, most of these things that are held up as prophecy are extrapolations of current events into the very near future.
Oh yeah,
and they are in fact the indicia of pretty perceptive people. But the thing is, if you go back, you know, 3,000-4,000 years, you have to have the imprimatur of, well, you know, I didn't just dream this up on my own; God told me.
Well, you know, it's like the old story. You ever heard the pyramid scheme? You know, where what they call it, was it the half and half?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you send people 500 people, you send 250 of them, that something's going to happen, 250 of the other's going to happen. Then the 250 that you got right, you send 125 one and 125 the other on the next thing. And by the time you get down to about 2-3, those people will think you are just absolutely clairvoyant.
Yeah.
You know, that you've got like 8 or 9 of these things right in a row, and it's like, give me all your money, and they're like, yes, yes.
I know. It's a con, okay? Oh, yeah. It's no different than what goes on in the New York City subways or anywhere else that some young man is dealing out a hand of three-card money.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, the thing that's got to me...
darned like, interesting game, I might add.
But, you know, it's like I say, the one good thing about tonight is I don't have to sit and watch the news because I know what it's going to be all night. Because that's all... You know, we know the story they're going to cover, and that's all they're going to cover tonight.
Swinging Saddam.
I'm just waiting for somebody to put that out. You know, here we go. Here's a new doll. Swinging Saddam. You know,
it'll be on YouTube before we know what happened. YouTube will know it before the White House does.
Oh, well, you know, it's one of these things. It's like, say, right now they're talking. I've had the sound off, and they're talking like, you know, it's going to be such and such tonight. And it's like they're just playing misdirection because they're probably going to go ahead and do it an hour or two before they say they're going to do it. They just don't want to have all the people screaming and hollering.
Well, you know, and there's still those 6 or 7 body doubles wandering around
oh,
out there.
it's one of those things. Other day I saw something when they were doing all this stuff with Ford, and they showed Kissinger. And a thought just struck me. You know, we had all these things where we were, what would they call it, rendering people?
Rendition.
Rendition, that's it, I'm sorry. And, you know, I just always wonder what happens if the Colombians ever came up and decided to rendition Henry.
Kind of makes you wish they would, doesn't it?
But you know what I mean? It's sort of like, you just love to see
oh, yeah, holler. Yeah, Hank Kissinger's got a rendering coming.
Oh, it's one of those things. Well, I tell you what, the way it's going, George W. might be on that list, too. Because there's some of these countries over there sort of like, George, you better never leave the U.S.
Well, I mean, that do you remember?
Once you're out of office.
What was it? Was it the trip to Austria where they had to redo the plumbing so that...
oh, God.
You remember that?
So he brought his porta potty with him.
Yeah, because you know, lest the royal offal fall into the wrong hands.
it's sort of like.
I mean, that's why Bart Cop, bless his heart, the boy in the bubble, uh-oh, the chimp in the bubble,
with the drop door at the back.
Oh God!
Oh, did you get the thing from Southern Poverty Law?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing all these people that we don't get to hear about on the news, and I'm sitting there going, why aren't we hearing about these people?
That's why I've decided to start referring to them as the National Press Corps.
I agree with you. But you know what I mean? It's like, say, with that and like the stories we were talking about a month ago, you know, about all these people getting caught with weapons and stuff around the U.S. And it was interesting. If you go to their site and go to their map, where they have the map of the U.S., and just visit a couple of states and just see all the fun things going on in some of the states.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, dang.
Yeah, fun in only the broadest sense of the word.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Luke, have a happy new year.
You too.
And is it black-eyed peas or corned beef and cabbage where you come from?
Well, you know how it is. I think probably honey grits.
Oh, okay. That works too.
Hey, yeah. Enjoy the...
Got to eat the lucky food on January 1.
I was going to say, enjoy your game. I'll enjoy mine.
Going to try. Go Vols.
Go Mountaineers.
We'll see you, Luke.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's see, our good friend Preston calling in from Colorado. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you for waiting. I hope you're not covered up in snow yet.
We are covered up in snow here.
But
I've got a nice warm igloo, and so I'm in good shape.
Good deal.
Yeah. And it was, I didn't mind waiting to speak with you at all. It was, as always, fascinating radio, listening to you and your callers. Great stuff.
Well, thank you very kindly. I love these conversations.
Yeah.